Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online, sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory. All with great warranties. Those warranties more important than ever. Great pre-owned inventory, the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, which means they go over every vehicle, really eases the buying experience. And a tremendous service department that backs it all up. From the routine to the difficult, they handle it. And when it comes time to trade in for your next SMC vehicle, your vehicle is in great shape. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Got my day off to a great start today. Breakfast with my good friends Tom McGrath, Randy Isles, Gary Goloshevsky, and off and rolling, and of course they wanted to know right away what your biggest gripe of the day happens to be. So let's go to the king of gripe, and then we'll get to Scott Fransky. We were going to have John Sterling on, but our policy at this time of the year is only have announcers on for playoff teams.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Alas, I don't want to hear any more about the tush-push not working, or now we're calling it the brotherly shove with the Eagles, because you saw an epic fail with that with the Giants last night. Not only did they not get it and were stuffed completely, it was actually, I think Seattle might have had a little bit of a blueprint to stop that. But then you have two guys get hurt, the tight end and your center. I mean, so I don't want to hear any more about the NFL needing to ban it or anything else, because guess what? Seattle, I think, found a way to stop it. And even so, we've seen other teams do it, including Penn State on Saturday, college and pro. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But this one last night with the Giants was an epic fail. Well, their whole performance was, but that play in particular. So I don't want to hear any more about let's ban the tush push, because guess what? Maybe the Eagles actually perfected it. Because you have a guy, you have a great offensive line, one of the best in the league, and you have a quarterback that squats 600 pounds. That helps too, you know. Just going to throw that out there.
First of all, defensive coordinators spend a lot of time in the offseason watching video, so you're trying to come up with a way to defend something that somebody does. And you know, the Eagles have a very good offensive line. They aren't the greatest offensive line I've ever seen, but they're good. They're really good. And the way they get low is impressive, and it makes it very difficult to counter. One of them, Hurts slid off to the left side, which is a smart play. You have to have something that's a variation off of it, and they showed a variation off of it the other day. Penn State's done it lately, but, you know, that's because people have done a good job of late of doing a better job against the T formation. Okay. All right. So, you know, defensive coordinators come up with ways, and believe me, there'll be times where Philadelphia will not make it using it. It's not an automatic. I mean, the best I ever saw running the quarterback sneak by a wide margin, it's not your guy. Okay. It's Tom Brady.
No, that's fair. But yeah.
Brady's the best I ever saw running it. And Bill O'Brien told me when he was with the Patriots, the first play they put in training camp was always that play because they knew they would need it.
And nobody complained about it then.
Yeah, but they didn't push. They just ran it. In other words, Brady was never pushed from behind, ever. I don't like the push from behind. I don't, you know, Jack and I both feel that way. We don't like it. USC got away with it against Notre Dame to kind of start the craze, and then they put it in the rules that you could do it. I don't like it, and I think it's dangerous, to be honest with you. I think it, you know, especially when And I'm not talking about on a quarterback sneak being dangerous. That's not what I'm talking about. How often are you seeing linemen go downfield and a guy is like, and I saw it in the Patriots game with the Dolphins, and they were trying to push the receiver after Gesicki lateraled it. I'm like, that's a dangerous play. Your own guy from behind? Like, that's what they got. That's why I'm not crazy about it, because I see sometimes in an open field play it happening. And I don't know. I don't like it. So a quarterback sneak's one thing, but the problem is you can't differentiate between a quarterback sneak and a play like that in the open field. Because to me, that open field play, that's dangerous. And it hurts when he went around the outside. They were going to push him from behind there, too. That's, to me, that's a dangerous play. And that's why I'm not quite in line with it. It's not the execution of it. It's the fact that guy can get hurt. You got guys like pounding into when they're pushing. It's not subtle. Surprise quarterbacks, like their ribs aren't like ugh, after going through something like that. All right, we'll take a break. Scott Fransky in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Want to work for a stable yet growing company? Got it. Want to work for a family-owned business with over 100 years experience in taking care of customers and employees? Got it. Want to work for a leader in selling more cars and satisfying more customers? Got it. Who has all that? SMC Sunbury Motor Company is looking for technicians across all their departments. Whether you're an entry-level technician, an experienced technician, or someone looking for a career change, Sunbury Motors would love to hear from you. They're looking for technicians for their quick lane, car and light truck service, heavy truck service, body shop, and frame and alignment division. You can apply online at sunburymotors.com, in person at our North 4th Street location, or call Todd at 570-286-7746. Your new career of working on Fords, Kias, Hyundais, Western Star trucks, plus anything that fits in the door, and some things that don't. Join Sunbury Motors. Your new career is waiting for you.
All right, here we go. Playoff time. And that means the door is open to more memorable calls by one of the best in the business, Scott Fransky, the voice of the Philadelphia Phillies. Scott, congratulations to you, L.A., and everybody there on another great season in the booth. Appreciate the work you do very much.
Thank you, and thanks for having me today.
I appreciate that. You go through a 162-game season, and as it's going along, there's a lot of ebb and flow to it. When did you start to get a sense, okay, you know what, this is not just a good team, this will be another playoff-caliber team, because nothing is given?
Well, I mean, I thought that they were a playoff-caliber team coming in. Obviously, they were 2 wins shy of a world championship last year. Some of that, you know, it's you get hot at the right time. But they did get in. They won 87 games last year, and that meant they were a good team to start. They added Turner and, you know, made a few changes to the bullpen that I thought made them a little bit better. So, obviously, they didn't get off to the start they wanted to. You know, kind of Atlanta sort of raced out and blew everybody out of the water. You know, with the wild card, there's another way in. And, I think obviously the way they turned it on in August, I thought was pretty encouraging. You know, they got through some tough parts of the schedule and got through some dog days. But the offense coming around in August, I think, was a flag that things were headed in the right direction.
There aren't many guys that have 48 singles and 47 home runs. So let's go to the top of the order in Kyle Schwarber. You see Schwarber on an everyday basis, and not just on the field, Scott, but also as a clubhouse presence. What does this guy mean to what the success that we're seeing with this club?
Oh, I mean, he means a lot. There's no doubt. He's pretty central to the culture in there. Obviously, it starts at the top and works its way down. But I think that having a guy like Schwarber in the locker room allows the manager to take care of the things he needs to take care of and only step in when it's really necessary. I do think that you know, having a strong presence in the clubhouse. And look, they have a lot of, you know, veteran guys, but I've not seen that many, you know, longtime veteran guys that are as liked sort of globally across the room than a guy like Kyle Schwarber. I mean, it doesn't matter what age, what position, what nationality, they all seem to gravitate towards him. And he has a certain way about him. He's kind of this everyman out there. And I know that, you know, people can kind of get behind him and you know, he's not your prototypical leadoff hitter and all that, but for whatever reason, it seems to work for this lineup to have him up there at the top.
Many times, big money free agents will struggle the first year, then settle down the second. We saw Trey Turner in the beginning of the year struggle. Then things turned around. Once they turned around, what did that do to the Phillies lineup and what Rob Thompson had envisioned when they acquired this guy?
Well, I mean, I think it makes them an incredibly, you know, a much more dynamic lineup. I mean, you look last year, Schwarber was at the top, but you had Rhys Hoskins in there as well. And while Hoskins got on base a lot, he drove in runs and he hit for power. You know, he couldn't run like a guy like Trey Turner. So having Turner in that spot, you know, again, Kyle doesn't get a lot of singles, but Turner will, and Turner can turn singles into doubles real quick, and he can score from first on a double by Harper, you know, with one out in the first inning. And I think that's a dynamic that the Phillies, they haven't had that sort of athlete in a long time in their lineup, and I think it made a big difference for everybody, because if he's doing that at number two, it allows Rob Thompson to go Schwarber one, Harper three, you know, against a right-hander, because you got a really good right-handed hitter bat second. And you know, they kind of searched for that for a while. You know, they tried Castellanos, Bowman did it a little bit, but you know, when Turner was bumped down in the order, but all along their hope was that Turner would do it. And you know, obviously in the last 2 months he did.
Scott, obviously in the postseason you see a little different pitching pattern as to how managers want to manage their bullpen and how quickly a starter can exit. You watch Rob Thompson manage in the postseason last year. What was his approach, and have you talked to him at all if he's rethought any of that approach with this year?
I don't think his approach will change too much from a year ago. And, you know, I know everybody talks about the one move in particular, and that was the one against Yordan Alvarez, of course, in Game 6. Taking Wheeler out, and you know, that'll be a storyline today, certainly, because the last playoff appearance for Wheeler was that night in Houston. You know, but I think by and large he will manage the same way, and that is, he will, you know, certainly watch his starter, and he will let hitters and you know, the starter's stuff tell him when he thinks there needs to be a change, and he will, you know, go to those matchups that he thinks are most favorable for the Phillies. And you know, Rob believes he has a lot of weapons in that regard, from, you know, middle innings. You know, the thing about it in the playoffs is everything is high leverage, right?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
Almost everything is high leverage. Games get out of hand, certainly, sometimes, but the fifth inning can be high leverage. The fourth inning can be high leverage, and it might require a move at that point. And I think one of the things he's doing is he's not committed on a Thursday starter for Game 3, and Ranger Suarez will be available out of the bullpen today and tomorrow. And if you find that spot that Wheeler or Nola struggles in the fourth inning or whatever, and he feels like he needs to make a change, he might go to a guy to kill the inning and then bring Ranger in to pitch multiple innings, you know. So I do think he does play matchups. He does thoughtfully, you know, he thinks about it from the very beginning. He knows which pockets of the lineup he's going to use which guys, and they kind of play it out in their minds. All right, what do we do if he goes bad here in the sixth? What do we do if he goes in the fourth? What do we do? Right. You know, they map all that stuff out. So I think we'll see basically the same sort of strategy from him as a manager this year.
And you've had a long look at the Marlins, playing them as often as the Phillies have this season. What's your impression of that ball club and this matchup?
They're good. They're a good team. They, you know, they scrap. They certainly, you know, didn't back down from the Phillies at all. I mean, they won the season series. So a lot of close games. There were a lot of games there that maybe the Phillies could have won. I mean, there's, you know, that one in particular, the one that Trey Turner made the error in extra innings down in Miami. Otherwise, the Phillies have a four-game sweep there, and then they win the season series, right? It's the other direction. So, again, in a way, it helps the Phillies in that they know they can't take these guys lightly, right? They beat them. They beat them 7 out of 13 this year. So they know that what Miami is capable of. And I'll tell you, I mean, today could be tough. Today could be tough sledding for those hitters because I think Jesus Luzardo is a really good pitcher and might very well be the worst matchup the Phillies could draw in the first game. And I say that even if somebody like Alcantara was healthy. I think Luzardo is a particular challenge for them, given the number of left-handed hitters that are in the lineup, and not just lefties, but significant left-handed hitters. You know,
sometimes a crowd can set the tone for everybody else in the playoffs. I felt that the bank crowd last year set the tone for everybody in Major League Baseball, and I heard more volume everywhere. But it's because of what happened in Philadelphia. When you're there and you're part of it, you know, what runs through as you're seeing and feeling this?
I think, you know, there are those moments where you really just try to sort of stop and absorb it because
as somebody who's broadcast 19 whiteouts in Beaver Stadium, I know what you're talking about.
we have a job to obviously describe what's happening and whatever, but sometimes the best thing we can do is just sort of shut up and take it in ourselves.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know. I always used to say this about the first time I went to Dodger Stadium, which wasn't until I was working for the Phillies in 2006. And I walked into Dodger Stadium, and I had seen, I don't know, 100 games on TV from Dodger Stadium.
Right.
And I said to myself, and as I walked in the stadium, I said, the colors that you see on TV don't do this place justice.
Right.
There's a certain look, and it's the same thing with the sound. There's something about it. I don't know that it would ever translate on radio or TV. I just think it's one of those things that you have to be there to be immersed in it, to experience it. And I think Garrett Stubbs called it a bucket list thing for people to do. Yeah. And I think he's, you know, if you're a sports fan, I think it is. It should be a bucket list thing for you.
No, I agree because you do a Penn State football whiteout, and Jack Ham and I have done all of them. You take your headphones off just for a second, just to absorb it because you know it's special.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Hey, Scott, thanks so much. Appreciate it on game day. You took the time to be with us, and again, always appreciate the great work you do.
Well, hopefully we got a long run in us, and we'll talk to you again before October is out.
I am all for that. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you bet.
Scott Fransky, one of the best in the business. So John Sterling wasn't available?
Yeah, I'm going to say probably not.
Well, what's he doing? Scott's working today.
I'm aware. I don't know what John Sterling's got planned.
Well, I do know what he does have, a lot of time in his hands.
Unfortunately, yes.
Your team. Fine, get on the train with the Phillies.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
You know, I'm hurt. I thought this was the number one show on the radio. Wow.
I thought too.
Hannity and I need to have a talk.
I agree.
All right. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai. Just awesome brands, great warranties, end of the year savings, and terrific pre-owned inventory because they go over all of it with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a great service department. Routine, difficult, they handle it all. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. So, your gripe is about the push. See, the push. I'm not for the push, and I said this last year. I'm not for it. Jack Hamm and I feel the same way. It's legal, so nobody's doing anything wrong. But I don't know. And it's helped Penn State. Penn State's been converting left and right with it, but never have been for it. It's illegal, so look, I'm running the offense, I'm like, well, I'm against it. No, I'd be using it. I'm just not crazy about it. Just me. Yeah. What other complaints do you have on this fine, beautiful Tuesday?
Well, this next one I saw has to do with, I don't know if you saw the Astros reporter for MLB.com, Brian McTaggart. I guess he posted something about ripping the way the Texas Rangers celebrated their postseason berth when they were still battling for the division for the day after.
I did read about this, yeah.
I mean, Chris Young, the GM of the Rangers, I applaud him for going after that reporter because he should, because I thought it was out of line. I wouldn't necessarily have called it a classless post, but it was definitely unprofessional and definitely out of line. Because if you're a journalist, let's not forget the Rangers haven't been in the playoffs since 2016, and this is one of the better turnaround stories in baseball right now.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I felt the same.
That's just an error on his part, so it was totally out of line.
I felt the same way you did. It was kind of like one of those cheap shot things. Like, I realize they're in the same state, and, you know, there's some sort of rivalry there, whatever. But it was like, and my understanding was the way the Rangers did it, they went in, had some champagne, boom, got all happy, but it lasted like 15 to 20 minutes. And they say all the plastic on the lockers was down within an hour. You made the playoffs. You played 162 games. You're in. That is something to celebrate. I mean, it's not easy. And especially, as Matt correctly points out, they haven't been in the playoffs, the postseason, since 2016. Hey, it's a big deal. And they should celebrate it. So it was kind of a cheap shot.
And not only that, too, I know as a reporter for MLB.com, he's not working for the Astros. Right. But if I were Astros PR or the front office, I would have a major problem with that, too, because my team already has a bad light for what's happened in 2017 and previous years. Now you got this guy adding to it. I'd be a little PO'd if I were the Astros PR in front office, and I'd be able to talk with that guy.
Yeah.
Now it's called read the room.
Yeah, my problem is with Rodney Harrison. Something that's on the—I believe Peacock carries their post-game show. Now, NBC does their show their post-game is Melissa Stark talks with the players of the game. They come back, and Mike and Chris preview the next game, which in this case is the Cowboys 49ers. And then that's it. But the guys on the sideline that you see before the game doing a post-game show. And Rodney Harrison is talking with Chris Jones. And He's talking to him about Zach Wilson. And look, we all know Zach Wilson's had his ups and downs. Everybody knows that. Zach Wilson will tell you he's had his ups and downs. But when he's talking with Chris Jones, he says, watching the tape, man, you got to look at this dude and say, oh, he is garbage. Like, we should really tear him apart, Harrison said while interrupting an answer in which Jones was praising Wilson. But tonight he came out and he played extremely well against you guys. After Jones later referred to Wilson as special again, Harrison refused to let it slide. He says, wait a minute. Did you say Zach Wilson is special? Yeah, Jones replied matter-of-factly. I think he had a special night, but I don't think he's special. He's got to prove that. You got to be special. You're special because you've proved it over a course of time. He's not special. I'm just saying, Chris. Okay. The part I object to is I had no problem with him saying he's not special. No problem with that. I mean, he's not incorrect about that. Over time, you have to do a series of things to be considered special in the game. But he says, watching that tape, man, you got to look at this dude and say, oh, he is garbage. Rodney, come on. If anybody ought to know that you don't do that to a player or say that about a player, it's you. There are 8 billion people in the world. 1,696 of them happen to be on 53-man rosters. That's 1,696 out of 8 billion. Is Zach Wilson one of the top 15 quarterbacks in the NFL? No. Everybody knows that, including Zach Wilson. In fact, the New York Jets know that. Zach Wilson did not start the year as the starter. He was one of the guys that was 33 through 64 at the position. He was a backup. And if anybody should know, it is a former player like Rodney Harrison. Because he's been out there. Rodney Harrison had many more really terrific days than mediocre days. But Rodney Harrison also did have some mediocre days. Everybody does. Everybody does. All right? And that you always, I always go back to, and I've used it before, and I'll say it again. Okay? And again, it's just it's referring to him or his game as garbage is what I object to, especially from somebody who's been there. Theodore Roosevelt, man in the arena. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. Rodney Harrison knows that. He's been the man in the arena. He's had highest of highs and many more because he was a really good player. And he's also had those mediocre days, right? He's the guy who, by the way, had great coverage, but he's the guy that got burned by the David Tyree helmet catch. And Rodney Harrison, look, he played the play extremely well. The guy just made a great play. But if anybody should know about not calling another player garbage or his game garbage. It should be somebody that's been in the arena before and understands all the twists and turns. I mean, out of the 1,696 players, where is Zach Wilson ranked? Who knows? Okay? But it's not in the top 200. We all know that. It's not in the top, probably not in the top 400 or 500. But he wasn't supposed to be the starting quarterback this year anyway. And to his credit, gave a very good account of himself on Sunday night. He gave a very good account of himself on Sunday night. And I have an issue with that. That's something that should not have been. That word should not have been used. And then I know when Christopher Russo was doing his show on Sirius XM, a Jets fan called up and referred to Harrison as a scumbag. Russo stopped him and said, hey, look, let's not use that language on the air. And Russo's right. You don't counter somebody using a word on national TV referring to the guy's game or whatever as garbage, and then you refer to the guy as a scumbag. It's like, come on. Let's be a little older than that. Okay? Let's be an adult about it. You can say, hey, what he said was wrong. That's fine. That's good enough. You don't have to name call. That's just me.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned on the show, at the end of the show yesterday, 100% about it. And there's a lot of good former players that are broadcasters, obviously Jack Ham being one of them. But this just goes to show you, too, that you can't also just hand a microphone to certain players after they are done with their career. You have to see if they can actually do the job correctly. Rodney Harrison should be fired for what he did Sunday night. He should be fired.
Oh, I wouldn't fire him. But I think it would be appropriate for him to start out the show on Sunday night when the 49ers play the Cowboys and say, look, you know what, Zach Wilson, you know, it's a word I shouldn't have used. You put together a really good game the other night, and I used the wrong word in referring to what I saw in film. And that's it. That's all you got to do. And I wouldn't fire him over that. I mean, there are a lot more fireable offenses in life than that. And it's not like he hasn't done some good work for for NBC over the years. He has. He's done some good work. I don't really watch a lot of pregame shows, but when I've seen him, he's been fine. Now, I'm probably more lenient on stuff like that. We can all tell you're not lenient at all.
I mean, I personally had never been a fan of his as a player and as a broadcaster.
Speaks highly of you.
Oh, my almighty!
But I wasn't crazy about that. I'm like, oh, man. Like, oh, you can't do that. But I will say this. The next project due by my sports broadcasting class is play-by-play, and that's due Monday. The next one is going to be talk shows, and this will be, at least to me, a teaching point for them. And I see teaching points around me all the time. I'll make a note of something that happens, and I'll say, yeah, teaching point. I better bring this up and talk to them about it. Because it's got to be, you know, it seems like more and more people are in the business are sliding that direction, and you can't slide in that direction. You got to be able to come up with better words to describe something that at least has a semblance of class to it. ...1,696 are playing in the NFL out of 8 billion. Okay. As I say all the time, they don't stink, but they're just not as good as that guy. And there was an example of that the other night. Is he as good as Patrick Mahomes? Of course not. But you know what? To his credit, went out there toe-to-toe and got that game to 20-20... And let's give him credit. Now, is it a building block for him? I don't know. We're going to have to see. And no, he's not considered to be one of the top two-thirds of quarterbacks in the NFL. Everybody knows he's struggled. That's why he started out the year between 33 and 64 on the quarterback chart. Okay. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more in a moment and more comments from Captain Hook. You're fired. You're a news.
Bingo!
Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
It was going to be a battle. He's continued to get better week in and week out, and he's continued to lead week in and week out.
But watching that tape, man, you got to look at this dude and say, oh, he is garbage. Like, we should really tear him apart. But tonight he came on, played extremely well against you guys.
Yeah, he played really well. People tend to forget he's a first-round quarterback.
Second pick overall, yeah.
Number two.
Yeah.
And that kid is special. You know, I'm not the one to bash a kid because they have a couple bad games.
I thought Chris Jones handled it really well. He's not throwing shade at the opponent. He's just saying, hey, look, he won the game. I always love when, like, a team beats another team, and the other team, they stink, they're awful. In other words, so it wasn't a great win? Like, well, no. It's like, it's okay to say the other guy's pretty good. Makes the win even better, doesn't it? Feel like I stole one of your lines. They're no good. Well, then your win wasn't that impressive. Drives you nuts, doesn't it?
In this case, no.
So, but Chris Jones handled it really well. Really well. All right. So, we do know the kickoff for UMass is going to be 3:30, but that was announced before the season, but not what network it was going to be on. That's the only thing that was missing was the network part. Penn State basketball put out its schedule today, because the Big Ten put out their schedule finally, which includes tip-off times. So, the tip-off times are there, including the Penn State-Bucknell game on December 2nd. That'll be a noon tip-off, all right? So, for the area fans, Bucknell will be at noon on Saturday, December 2nd. And for the most part, the schedule's fine. I didn't realize the game at Northwestern was Super Bowl Sunday. Okay. So like 1 o'clock Eastern time, we're on at 12:30. Game's over at 3, post-game show at 3:30, Pack get out of there at 4. About 45 minutes out to the airport, 4:45 on the plane, probably up in the air at 5:30. I'd say we'd be back somewhere in the middle of the first quarter. So all that stuff that like you and the suit like really love, like the pregame show and how long the national anthem is and things like that, I'll miss all that. I'll actually be back in time for the part I like, the game. Do you guys watch the game?
We do,
yeah. I mean, like, the two of you are so obsessed with all the other stuff around the game. Like, okay.
I take in the whole thing. I take in the whole event. And by the way, it would be the Big Ten that would schedule a game on the Super Bowl, on the day of the Super Bowl.
Everybody does, Matt. Everybody schedules that day. There's nothing going on until you get to 6:30 at night. Why wouldn't you? I have no problem with that. None. There's always games that day, all across the board. I mean, you're trying to take care of really a dead period. I mean, what's your big fear? You're going to be beaten out by the pregame show?
For some games, it could be possible.
Like, there's just people talking.
I know. I'm just telling you what I see. That's all.
Every year, you know what I watch? I usually watch the Waste Management Open from Scottsdale. Crowd's energetic. That 16th hole is just phenomenal. I'll watch that. Then I'll tune into the Super Bowl. Because I'm actually watching people do something. And the Penn State game with Northwestern's a 1 o'clock in the afternoon game. It ends at 3 o'clock. It ends 3.5 hours before the Super Bowl kicks off. I'm just saying, because it's on the road, I'm going to have to travel back.
Right, I guess for Penn State's sake, selfishly, I guess, in this case, that it would they would have to have a road game the day of the Super Bowl.
That just happens. That's not. I don't think that's a big deal. That's. I mean, I've done games on Super Bowl Sunday on the road before. Remember, the first time I did it was St. Bonaventure when the Giants played the Broncos. Man, when the game's over, you have to get on a bus and bus back. At least in this case, I'll be flying back. It's actually a quicker trip.